have sued Union Pacific. I talked recently with Sandra, who is no longer the president of Impact Fifth Ward. She says she's actually spoken to residents affected by the Norfolk Southern train disaster in East Palestine.
Yeah, they reached out to me and they wanted to know how, you know, what's the next steps or how would they go about this. I say raise a lot of noise as much as you can, because if we would have done that when this happened out here, we wouldn't be living like this right now. You know, these are people over here. People are losing kids, their parents. They're losing left and right over here while we're still trying to survive over here. I hate that it's nothing to hold this multi-billion-dollar company accountable. When they break the law, who holds them accountable? What kind of charges can you bring up on them? They have a license to kill, and nobody is taking it from them.
So often, it's communities of color and rural and lower-income communities who have to bear the brunt of environmental harm and injustice from the railroad companies. Meanwhile, Sandra Edwards and others in the Fifth Ward and Cashmere Garden neighborhoods in Houston, Texas, are still fighting for accountability, as are Jamie Wallace and residents in East Palestine and other impacted communities. And that does it for today's show. If you'd like more information or to hear the full Living Downstream story, visit us at radioproject.org. I'm Lucy Kang. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. On September 10th, the Moreland Theater will show a special screening of The Masked Villain of Selwood, an original silent film, a story inspired by writings from a group of young men in Oregon Youth Authority custody between the ages of 13 and 17. They participated in storytelling theater workshops led by Rogue Pack, a nonprofit youth theater school in Portland. The Masked Villain of Selwood is set in the early 1900s. Here's the plot synopsis. With the Second Industrial Revolution in full swing, a genius boy's broken home leads him to search for a mother's affection. He invents an electronic device that alters the part of the brain responsible for love and memory. When Nora Flynn, the bride, is kidnapped by the boy on her wedding day, it will take the bravery and nimble wit of her young daughter, along with a bunch of little rascals, to save her. Will this gang of misfits bring home the bride before her memories are hijacked forever? And if the young villain's plan is derailed, can he be redeemed and discover acceptance and friendship? I had the chance to catch up with the team at Rogue Pack and some of the young people who were featured in the silent film to learn more about the project.
I am Ann Singer, and I am the executive director of Rogue Pack Theater for Youth. We serve underserved youth, so we do outreach to the homeless shelters and the prisons, the detention centers, DHS foster care, homeless, any kind of homeless youth organization, any organization where kids are needing a little extra support, and we do storytelling theater workshops.
Hi, I am Randy Sean Schulman, and I am the writer-director of The Masked Villain of Selwood. I'm an actor, film actor and television actor in Portland, came from L.A. about 13 years ago, and super stoked for this opportunity.
My name's Evelyn Williams. I was one of the kids in the Rascal Gang that kind of takes center of the movie.
Hi, my name is Callie Fulfin, and yeah, I was part of the gang too, to save the bride and stuff.
Hi, I'm Rosmo Stegimi, and I played the bride in this movie. I also teach theater and act outside of this as well.
Hi, my name is Gus. I was part of the gang of rascals. I mean, who kind of was like the center of the movie?
You wanna give us your name?
Well, it is Lucy Lee Lamb.
Before we get talking about the movie itself, could you tell me a little bit about Rogue Pack and maybe how other folks got involved?
Sure. Well, we've been around since about 2014 now. Our outreach program has been, but recently we just started the Rogue Pack Theater Collective, which is for these youth that we have here. So these are the youth from Selwood, and they pay to take classes with Randy. They were all with in Randy's acting for the camera class, and that's how we got them involved into auditioning for this film. And everybody was really excited, right, when they knew that Randy was directing a film. They were like, yeah, sign us up. So, and then also their parents also got involved. A lot of the grown-ups from Selwood got involved with it. So they can act in this film, which was inspired by children in Oregon Youth Authority custody. Those are the Rogue Pack kids who participated in the Rogue Pack Theater, storytelling theater workshops. And they cannot be filmed or recorded. So then we have these lovely people to be able to say their words and make their words come alive, luckily. And it is the words of Randy. Randy wrote the screenplay, which is based on the writings from the youth.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So the film, The Masked Villain of Selwood, will be screened at the Moreland Theater on September 10th. And I want to know a little more about the making of this piece, obviously starting with the script. Where did the ideas come from? Obviously, you touched on that a little bit, but I'm curious about how it got meshed together.
Yeah, I think it was a couple years ago, Anne approached me and asked what I would like to do because Rogue Pack was going to apply for 2 or 3 grants. And I had always wanted to do a silent movie. I kind of come from that type of storytelling, silent storytelling in Los Angeles, where I had a theater company for many years. So she went back to her students, and they all wrote short narratives, some poetry, and I took a look at all that material and just started, essentially I separated sentences here and there out of the poetry that I think spoke to me with regard to universal themes and emotions, love, loss, abandonment, these various themes, and that's how I started to work on The Masked Villain of Selwood, which is essentially about a young man who is, I think, dealing with the trauma of abandonment. And I thought, you know, how the heck am I going to turn this into a silent movie? And we live in Selwood, which is kind of a picturesque little village in Portland, and it sort of lends itself to that era. So I started to get to work on the screenplay, and, you know, we batted around a few ideas, and I think a year later, we started pre-production.
Yeah, and I just have to add that Randy really, in his screenplay, he really reflects the Rogue Pack youth's experience, which is coming from these abusive backgrounds. And so they end up behaving in ways that to society doesn't make any sense, but to them it does, because they've had to survive and to use coping skills to survive these extremely abusive situations. And he just reflects that beautifully in this film, in the story.
Oh, thank you.
For all of the actors of the film in the room, what did you think of the script when you first read it?
Well, the interesting thing about the script is that we didn't read it when we were filming. The script was really more of a series of shots that Randy wanted to make. And then some lines of dialogue, because as a silent film, it's really not as reliant on dialogue as a movie that you would watch today.
I generally did read the script when I saw it, but it was really good, and there was hardly any talking.
Yeah.
Only for mouthing.
Yeah, you did a few, like, mouthing things that they kept in there where, you know, you were just, like, talking, but then they, like, did a lot of subtitles. That was cool to watch you, like, scream things.
Yeah, there are a few chosen intertitles, so dialogue cards throughout the short film. It's only about 41 minutes with credits, and a few of the characters do have some dialogue with regard to that, the bride and Sam, who's not here today but plays the villain, and those are kind of peppered throughout the narrative.
I mean, I didn't read the script, but just like hearing your plan for the, like, we'd get to set and you'd like explain what we're doing, and that just, it, like, the plan that you had for it just seemed really well laid out, and like you really understood the characters and the plot.
Well, thanks. And you guys did an awesome job out there without a script. I mean, I've written conventional scripts before, plays and screenplays and so forth. And I don't know, working this way just doesn't... A few people asked for the script, but the way I work on silent material, it's just difficult to describe on paper. So I'm left with a series of song titles and, you know, descriptors and notes with regard to physicality and how things are going to move according to the camera and the blocking that we work out. All of that is on paper, and the entire soundtrack is cut before I shoot any frames. So I've got the whole soundtrack laid out with lots of notes, and then, you know, being open to also things just happening organically on set, which happened quite a bit. So you find some cool stuff that way.
Why a silent film?
Why a silent film? Well, so as I said, my wife and I had a theater company in LA for about 10 years, and I did a trilogy of silent style plays. The first one was called Infinity, and the second one was La Gioconda, which was a black and white, I don't know, Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin film, but live on stage. And it was loosely based on the theft of the Mona Lisa in 1911. So it was a kind of a 2-hour roller coaster ride, all set to music. A score that I kind of, you know, handpicked over the course of about 2 years. And then we went to work on it, physicalizing everything. And then I left LA in 2009 after my last show, Luminous Birch, which was also silent. And I shot about a 50-minute silent film that accompanied all the action on stage. So I don't know, I kind of gravitate toward that type of storytelling, I think because of the music. And I let the music be such a driving force with regard to, again, the dance that takes place between the camera and the characters and the storyline.
And also, I can speak to that as well. It lends itself so well, the silent genre, to work with kids. Because, you know, you can keep talking. Nobody has to be quiet. Nobody has to be silent. And that's so hard, especially when you're working with a big group of kids, right? So perfect for, that's why I was so attracted to it. And also working with my youth, the Rogue Pack youth, to get them to not worry so much about words so much. Can you act out? Act this out, or how does this look? And that, you know, as if it were a silent film, what would it look like? And to get them to do that in workshops was really, that was interesting.
Yeah, it's a good point. And also just to be able to direct every actor while I'm shooting. And I shot the entire thing on an iPhone. So, and it looks pretty amazing. I was so happily surprised when I test screened it last week. Because you really never know how these things are going to go when they're blown up full scale like that, but it looks great.
For the actors, what did your friends and family think when you told them you were going to be in a silent film? That's not something that happens every day.
Well, my parents were very interested and were like, "You should do this. You should do this." I'm like, "Okay." And my friends were very interested too. I mean, most of them. But they all really liked it. There were a few long days, but they did like it.
Lots of long days running on the train tracks in Selwood.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I think my family was particularly excited about it. Like, they were really eager to talk about it with me. And a lot of my friends just wanted to be able to see it, and I think they might, so I think that'll be exciting.
My family was really excited and all really wanted to see the premiere, although they're all scattered along the country. But at least my grandmother can come. And my mom only told a lot. My mom told a lot of her friends at work.
So my parents, yeah, they told me and they were like, "Do you want to be in this?" And I was like, "Sure." And yeah, lots of my family, they were really happy and excited to see it, and some will be visiting us to go see it. And my friends, yeah, they're pretty interested.
I think my friends were pretty intrigued because, I mean, they know that I do acting. But, you know, I do, like, comedy shows, or I'm in, like, my friend's student films. I think that they were really drawn into the novelty of a silent film, because I think it's easy to be like, oh, you know, I'm starring in my friend's horror movie, but, like, you hear that a lot. But in comparison, saying, oh, I'm in a silent film, I feel like it's not quite as common. And my friends are always like, oh, like, what's the story? What's going on? When can we see it? And I think I might be the only actor in this room who does not currently live with my parents. Mm-hmm. And I hopefully they'll be able to make it up here to see it when it's airing on the 10th.
Had you guys seen a silent movie before, or did you have, like, a preconceived idea of what it would be like to be on a silent film set?
I have. I've recently, I'm particularly interested in, like, Hollywood movies, so I've seen kind of, like, the first few Best Picture winners, like, Wings in 1929. It was a silent film. It was really, really good, and so I've seen a few after that. I'm trying to watch all of them, but I've seen, so I had kind of, like, a preconceived, like, notion, like, way to think about it, and so that kind of gave me a little bit of an idea of what I was doing. So.
My parents really like silent movies and black and white movies. Like, they really like older movies, so they've had me watch a few.
I've adored the 1920s and 1910-1920s, and I thought a silent black and white film would be great since I was already taking acting classes. And also I have seen a bit of tiny bit of silent film.
I've never seen one, but I kind of had, like, a picture in my mind. But after, like, seeing just a couple clips of, like, lots of silent movies, I definitely knew what it was going to be about and how it would look.
I've truly only seen clips and snippets of, like, the most famous ones, like Buster Keaton standing like where a house frame just fell down, yeah, and A Trip to the Moon, and really that's it.
Yeah, it was fairly challenging, I think, to shoot around cars and just our sort of 21st century environment, and that's why we chose a few locations that kind of lent itself to early 1900s. Even the train tracks were fairly challenging because off in the distance you'd have, you know, cars just whipping by. And
the bicyclists.
The bicyclists, yeah. Occasionally a jogger.
Several times.
Yeah. Stop and roll again. And by and large, I mean, cut around a lot of that stuff and get a little creative with it. We shot at also the Selwood, gosh, I'm forgetting the name of that church, the church in Selwood.
Pioneer
Church, yeah, thank you. Right by Selwood Park, which is a beautiful, you know, quaint church of the time. And then we built out a little set at the top of the Selwood Community House in the attic, and we kind of made a little laboratory, a little mad scientist laboratory. Just by pulling a bunch of props and things together. Actually, it looks quite nice, I think, on film. But yeah, there were some just sort of inherent challenges, I think, to make it look and feel like early 1900s.
And then you used somebody's house?
Yes, we used a Victorian house, late 1800s. I think it was built in Selwood as well. They were gracious enough to allow us to shoot a couple scenes on the exterior. And
Reed
also
College.
Reed College. We just jumped on campus and you know, did our thing. A lot of people in the background there, so we had to kind of shoot for, I think, a good 45 minutes to get clearance from people hanging out on the quad and so forth and cars passing. But yeah, anything that kind of lent itself to this era, I kind of jumped at the chance at in terms of environmentally.
Railroad tracks.
Create atmosphere.
Did y'all have a favorite memory from being on set? Or Ooh. A favorite scene or something like that?
I really liked the time when we were at Reed College and we were walking down the pathway and there was this guy behind us and he's like, hey, can you please move? We're like, yeah, sure. We look behind us, and there's like a group of like 400 people behind us.
Oh, right. They were ready to practice. Rehearse for
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was after 45 minutes of kind of just reshooting, you know, all of a 10-second scene, but having to reshoot because a car or someone would be in the background. Mm-hmm. We finally got it.
Yeah.
And then if we were 20 seconds later, we would have ran into all these students who were practicing graduation.
Honestly, I really, as difficult as it was to be running on train tracks in like a full like plague doctor mask and cloak and everything, as difficult as that was, it was really fun. I mean, I think all of us kind of had fun running on the train tracks. And there was one part where Randy had us fall through a door on the train tracks, and we like landed on a mattress, and we were all just like piled on top of each other. It was fun.
That was a fun scene.
Yeah, I thought the door thing was pretty funny too. Yeah, I think probably my best memory was just like talking with all the people that I was with. And yeah, it was just really fun cooperating with others.
I also liked when we were filming at the Victorian house, we had to kind of pick someone up and like swing them like almost mm-hmm. through a door. And that was really fun to shoot.
I mean, it was pretty hot or cold in my dress. It was the worst for all weather.
Yeah. I think my favorite scenes to film were the big wedding scenes, because in a lot of the scenes I am either comatose or moving around very robotically. So it was one of the few times that I got to like breathe life into the character I was playing and kind of play her as she was outside of the influence of the villain. And another fun thing about that was like everyone was there. It was the kids, it was like these adult extras who were often your guys' like parents and families. And everyone was like very dressed up too. Like it kind of almost felt like a real party sometimes. And it was so fun watching everyone interact and just getting to have like fun banter with everyone. It felt like a real party. And oh, during the wedding scene, the person who's marrying us, obviously we won't hear it because it's a silent movie, but she was just ad-libbing and just saying like the best things. She was so funny. I think she actually used to...
She used a couple.
Yeah, she used to marry people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a priest. Yeah, that's Moroni McKee who plays the priest.
It was so funny.
It was so fun.
Yeah, we certainly went through the seasons on this thing. I told Anne that, you know, this was going to take several months to film because, as you can imagine, just logistically with so many people involved and the schedules, particularly kids' schedules. And I think, again, we went into pre-production like November of last year and, you know, slated to start shooting in January, and we wrapped, gosh, I don't know, what was
June,
it? June?
June 2nd.
June 2nd, thank you. Precise. So June 2nd. So, you know, I think there was 15 days on the books, 16 all told. Now, some of those were only 2 hours, 3 hours, but, you know, really had to pen that out over that many months, also for my own personal schedule. So that's why it took so long to do.
It was 15 days, but it was also 6 months of the things. So that's another thing. And then
got taller. Well I didn't, but...
Yeah. You did, Gus.
So I want to know more about this event on September 10th. What can people expect?
Okay, well, I can speak to that. Yes, it is a fundraiser so that Rogue Pack can keep doing projects like this with youth, and we can help both... you know, our Rogue Pack youth, and we can help the youth in the community of Selwood as well. There will be a raffle. There will be, you know, really nice prizes. There's like 3 big baskets. And only the people who show up get these prizes. So there's pretty good odds of winning something. There's also going to be a silent auction. There's a hotel stay in McMinnville at the Atticus Hotel. And dinner that you can win. That's probably our biggest prize. But lots of other stuff, blazer tickets, and lots of gift certificates from all of the businesses around Selwood. Selwood is an amazing community. community that really supports, has supported Rogue Pack, supporting this project, and they've been wonderful. There's also going to be a Q&A after the film. The film is about 30 minutes, and then a few more minutes for the credits to roll. The credits are very important. People will see their names and the businesses from Selwood in there. But also there's going to be readings from some of these kids here. Randy had them record the original writings, which I actually have here, of the kids who from Oregon Youth Authority custody. Those are boys ages 13 to 17. Maroney McKee and I did a workshop with these kids at Janus Youth Programs, and I come back and I do workshops with them every once in a while because they're just lovely. They're just wonderful, wonderful kids who have so much to say. So you'll hear these their words at the end of the film read by, let's see, Collie's doing it and Lucy's doing it, I know, and a few other of the kids. Then there will be a Q&A, so you will actually be able to ask these kids and Randy and all of us questions, anybody who worked on the film and were in the film, more questions about their experience filming the movie. I'm having these kids also sign copies of the poster, and then we're going to auction those off. So yeah, it'll be a big party.
If listeners are interested in finding out more, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can go to roguepack.org, and they will find a link to buy tickets there. They can also see the trailer. Social media outlets, Instagram, follow us on Instagram, @WeAreRoguePack. And so through social media, also sign up for our newsletter, and you'll get more information there too. And posters are, the Selwood and Southeast, most of Southeast Portland is very well postered with all the posters from for this movie.
Would y'all make another silent film now that you've had this experience?
I think I would. I think it was really fun. And you didn't have to worry so much about being like quiet on set, which is easier. So yeah, it was an overall good experience. And it also, like, just seeing so many old like silent films, I've seen like 5 or 6 now, and getting to be part of one was just like a really cool way to like embody that, and I really love that.
I would do it again. It was really fun. I liked it, even though some days were very long, but I really liked it still.
I absolutely would. I love that it's a very different style of acting than what I've done before.
Yeah, me too, and I agree with Gus. It would, some days really long and cold or hot, but I would do one again.
And I think part of the motivation for me was just to shoot this with as much sort of simplicity as possible and low kind of, not production value, but, you know, not a lot of toys, not a lot of bells and whistles, to be hopefully inspiring to young people that they have this thing in their pocket, most of us, not all of us, that can do so many things besides just, I don't know, scrolling through Instagram and TikTok and so forth. I mean, you really do. You have this device that you can get super creative with, and I hope some folks walk away inspired by that after seeing this film.
I would definitely do another film, a silent film, because first, I really don't like to hear my voice on camera. So I won't really like hearing it on the radio generally.
I've been speaking with the team at Rogue Pack about their original silent film, The Masked Villain of Selwood. There'll be a special screening at the Moreland Theater on September 10th from 12 to 2 p.m. More information is available online at roguepack.org. For KBU News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. Thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
I'm out to sing songs. It'll prove to you that this is your world. And that if it's hit you pretty hard.